The Guy Benson Show will be back in 1 minute. Benson will be on in 30 seconds.
Unconventional talk from a fresh, unconventional conservative. The Guy Benson Show.
It is Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. This is the Guy Benson Show. I'm Guy Benson. I'm back. Glad to be back from a short little vacation stint surrounding my one-year wedding anniversary. We'll talk more about that at the end of the program in our home stretch. Always available on the podcast as well, which we recommend at GuyBensonShow.com. All the ways to listen live, catch key interviews, and subscribe or download free episodes of the podcast. No charge to you. GuyBensonShow.com. And for that podcast, some of our other partners include Spotify, Pandora, iTunes, and the iHeartRadio app. We've got a big show for you today. U.S. Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming will be here talking about a coronavirus relief package that will get a vote in the Senate tomorrow. Well, at least there'll be an attempt to move onto the bill and debate it. We will see whether Senate Democrats will filibuster that attempt that was announced just yesterday by the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. We will have details about that legislation with Senator Barrasso. Then in the next hour, we'll have another U.S. Senator, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, a Republican. He's got a proposal to reform the U.S. Senate that doesn't involve blowing up institutions. Interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal. We'll talk about that issue with him, plus news of the day. Sandra Smith, co-anchor of America's Newsroom on Fox News Channel, will round out our guest list in our final hour, the happy hour. That's 5 p.m. Eastern time. So stay tuned for the entire program. We've got a lot to get to here, and I'm chomping at the bit. Whenever I'm gone for a couple days, I'm just ready to dive right back in. I would make one programming note that on the TV side, I'll be joining Shannon Bream tonight, Fox News at night in the 11 p.m. Eastern hour on the news channel. So feel free to tune in for that or set your DVR. Fox News alert as we get going. As we always do, let's bring you the coronavirus statistics. Confirmed cases of the virus in the United States, 6,310,663. The death toll almost at 190,000, 189,147. The Dow is way up today, as are the markets generally, a big rally on Wall Street. And I'll be actually curious to ask Sandra Smith about that specifically. Right now, the Dow is up 684 points. NASDAQ way up as well. Why? Well, there's some good news. I think the markets are excited about a couple developments, but I'll let Sandra weigh in when we have that conversation. I want to begin with the biggest news of the day in the political world, and this is certainly something that is going to impact the presidential campaign. Reading now from FoxNews.com, President Trump told the Washington Post's Bob Woodward back in February that the emerging novel coronavirus was, quote, deadly, speaking in more dire terms than he was publicly at the time. That according to account of Woodward's new book. It's called Rage. And what's interesting about this report, right, we had a huge series of news cycles that already seem like old news about allegations involving something Trump may have said about American soldiers who had died being fools or what have you and not understanding their sacrifice and not wanting to go pay his respects at a cemetery. There are all anonymous sources in that story. And some people who were in the room have come out to refute at least pieces of it. Even the former National Security Advisor John Bolton came out and said, well, actually, this key part of that story where the allegation was made in the Atlantic, he said for a fact he knows that it's not true, that the president's trip to this particular cemetery, the same cemetery, incidentally, where I went with the National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien on my recent trip to France, it's that same cemetery. That trip that Trump had on the books was scuttled because of weather, says John Bolton. Contra the allegation in the Atlantic story. So I don't know. I don't put a lot past Donald Trump when it comes to saying things that are offensive, sometimes even deeply offensive. I have no idea what he did or did not say. But I do know there's enough mud in the water on that story where you have people contradicting significant details, others talking to multiple journalists saying off the record or not using their names, no, it is true, or I heard this or I heard that. I don't know what the answer is on that one, right? I think that that is murky. In this case, and the reason I even mentioned that story, which really blew up while I was gone on Friday and consumed a lot of the weekend, I raise it to juxtapose it with this Woodward story because Woodward has Trump on tape. It was on the record. We're going to play you some sound here. This is President Trump on the phone with Bob Woodward, and he knew he was being recorded. This was an on-the-record conversation for this book, Rage, which is about to come out. Some details are now leaking in dribs and drabs, and certainly the president had to have known this. The president gave him permission. Now, typically what Woodward will do is he'll talk to key players and give them a period of embargo, right, where he doesn't report anything immediately, but it comes out in the book. If Trump was being super candid, which it sounds like he was, with Bob Woodward, why he would say, okay, feel free to publish that before the election, totally is mystifying to me. I have no idea why. But those evidently were the rules. And so now with this book, Rage, about to drop, the Washington Post and others now have excerpts of it, and Woodward has put out the audio of these conversations. So this is, for the timeline, this is February 7th, a conversation. This is very early, really, I would say more than a month before coronavirus seemed to get really bad here in the United States. That was mid-March. This was 5 weeks prior to that. Trump on the phone with Bob Woodward. This is from Bob Woodward and his recordings for his book Rage, cut 38.
Now it's turning out it's not just old people, Bob, but just today and yesterday. Some startling facts came out. It's not just older
yeah, exactly.
young people, to plenty of young people.
So give me a moment of talking to somebody, going through this with Fauci or somebody who kind of it caused a pivot in your mind, because it's clear just from what's on the public record that you went through a pivot on this to, oh, my God, the gravity is almost inexplicable and unexplainable.
Well, I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you.
Sure, I want you to
I
be.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
Okay, so just to be clear, let me correct something. That was late March, that clip, cut 38. Trump talking about downplaying, playing down fears about the virus. I will return and circle back to that issue. But in February, in cut 39, Trump made clear that he had pretty good insight into the way that this virus was transmitted. No thanks to the WHO, by the way, which was spouting Chinese propaganda just weeks earlier. And in this conversation, this is back in February, he also explained how deadly it was compared to the flu. So listen to cut 39.
It goes through air, Bob. That's always tougher than the touch. You know, the touch, you don't have to touch things, right? But the air, you just breathe the air, and that's how it's passed. And so that's a very tricky one. That's a very delicate one. It's also more deadly than your, you know, your even your strenuous flus.
So that's, I think, a really important soundbite here in this, where Trump was saying in early February that the coronavirus has passed through the air, through breathing, and it is, quote, more deadly than even your strenuous flus. And in that conversation in February, Trump got into that saying, oh, yeah, it's X times more deadly than a flu. And I think the reason that that's a problem for this president and for his reelection, certainly, as people evaluate his leadership, if he was telling Bob Woodward on the record, but not to be disclosed until months later, that this thing was easily transmissible, highly contagious, and much more deadly than the flu, that's February 7th. But let's look at this tweet from President Trump, March 9th, so about a month later. He tweeted, this is from @RealDonaldTrump, so last year, 37,000 Americans died from the common flu. It averages between 27,000 and 70,000 per year. Nothing is shut down. Life and the economy go on. At this moment, there are 546 confirmed cases of coronavirus with 22 deaths. Think about that, exclamation point. So that was early March, a month after he told Woodward this is very contagious and much more deadly than the flu. Then he's making a month later flu comparisons to, in fact, downplay the virus. That is a problem. Now, today, the press secretary at the White House, Kayleigh McEnany, gave a press conference. She came out, and she was asked about the downplaying issue, and she denied it, which I think is, again, hugely problematic. Listen to Cut 41, this exchange, just a little while ago.
How can a president bear no responsibility for the almost 200,000 lives lost when he downplayed the virus initially and he knew that how contagious and deadly it was? I don't understand how that can...
The president never downplayed the virus. Once again, the president expressed calm. The president was serious about this when Democrats were pursuing their sham impeachment.
Okay, so we can just stop it there. Calm. Right, so she pivots away, but she says the president never downplayed the virus. Now, you can argue with the premise of that question about how much responsibility is on the shoulders of the president and what he could have done differently sooner, whether his critics would have applauded if he had taken more significant and swift action. I think there's probably a very strong case that they would have said, oh, this is fear-mongering, he's doing this for political reasons. I think there's a lot of bad faith in politics, always, but especially these days. And I thought there was a very interesting and thoughtful column and Twitter thread by Ross Douthat at the New York Times, right-leaning but not a Trump fan at all, saying he's not convinced the data shows that the U.S. is catastrophically worse or significantly better than the rest of the industrialized world and sort of peer nations when it comes to a lot of these metrics on coronavirus. And he went through, he said, we're about average. We're a little better than average in some stuff, a little worse than average in others. Could that have been dramatically different if Donald Trump had done some things differently? I think he probably should have done some things differently. We know that Joe Biden was critical of the China travel ban, which he called xenophobic, right? Biden wasn't exactly ahead of the curve on a lot of this stuff. Neither were the Democrats. I think part of the concern was Trump sending very mixed signals about the severity of the disease and what should be done about it. And then another big concern and criticism is that he was just all over the map, where he could not have the discipline to focus on the job at hand and got pulled into all these stupid, petty fights all the time while this pandemic was ravaging the country. Right? There are absolutely bona fide, fair critiques of the president and his administration and how they responded to this, just as there are bona fide, fair critiques of other countries' leadership and state by state, where some leaders did a lot better than others. And sometimes the coverage in the media would have you believe the opposite effect is true, where the bad leaders are somehow good and the good leaders have been made into these villains. But to that Kayleigh McEnany soundbite that I just played for you, the president said, and we played you the cut, he told Bob Woodward in March, I have been downplaying this. I've been playing it down, and I like to play it down. I continue to play it down because I don't want panic. Then McEnany says the president never downplayed the virus. You can't say that when the president, in his own voice on the record, literally says that he did do that. You can make an argument the downplaying was only for public consumption to avoid panic, which is what the president said to Bob Woodward. And I think it's fair. You don't want to go out there hair on fire, screaming and yelling, we're all going to die. You need to, no matter what leadership position you're in, you need to make sure that you are steady and calm. I wouldn't say that Trump was always steady and calm about this issue, whether in public statements, at these press conferences, certainly on Twitter with a lot of the tweeting and all caps messages and the downplaying and comparing it to the flu, which we know he knew better, right? He knew better a month earlier. I think there is a way to frame it as downplaying as panic avoidance, which is responsible and good, versus downplaying it in a way that is irresponsible and bad. And that, I think, is going to be the rub. Now, I think the Democrats and a lot of their allies in the press, they're going to be very happy to have this conversation. They want to pivot back to coronavirus, remind people that they weren't happy with Trump's performance, and coast into Election Day. I think that that's part of the plan, and Trump has helpfully served this issue up on a platter by agreeing to these crazy rules and embargo dates for Bob Woodward, who, by the way, sat on all this information, right? He's sitting there saying, hey, the president's talking about a pandemic this way, in the middle of it with people dying, I'm going to wait and then reveal it, what, less than 2 months before the election. But he didn't come up with those rules or impose them on the fly. They were set ahead of time. Trump and the team apparently agreed to it. And, I mean, this one is, it's not good if you're a Trump supporter. So the president is expected to speak at some point, maybe later this hour, near the top of the hour. We will monitor that. If we can, we will take some of it live or close to live, because we already see the Biden campaign swinging on this. They are going to make hay of this. The press is in a feeding frenzy. A lot of this is a problem of Trump's own making, and we'll see how the president himself comes out and defends it. And I think there's probably ways to frame it more favorably, and we'll see if he's able to achieve that. But you know the questions will not be kind if he takes them. There'll be hostile questions, something that his opponent Joe Biden almost never gets. Even when he rarely takes questions, they're softballs. I've got a break. I'm over time. We're just getting going on this Wednesday. It's the Guy Benson Show. Stay tuned.
Guy Benson will be right back.
Hey, if you look around, you watch the television, everything's different in the world today. We'd benefit from something reliable, something we can depend on, you can rely on. Well, what can be more reliable in your life, in your bank account, than real gold and silver? It's gold and silver that you can actually hold in your hands, and you can put it in your IRA or 401k. It's really easy. I know what you're saying. I never did that before. Where do I start? Well, that's why I want you to call the Oxford Gold Group, and you could do it right now. You'll learn how easy it is to get real gold and silver sent securely to your home, or how you can have real gold and silver placed in your retirement accounts, whatever that may be. So call the Oxford Gold Group. They're really cool at 833-600-GOLD and ask for your free guide on owning gold and silver. The Oxford Gold Group is the only gold company that I trust. You know what? And you should too. They'll walk you through it. They don't expect you to be some business savvy international trader. Call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-600-GOLD to speak with a gold and silver expert. That's 833-600-GOLD, 833-600-G-O-L-D.
Hiring the best people can transform your business and help take it to another level. Indeed can certainly help you find those talented people. We have nearly 3/4 of all job seekers in the U.S., according to ComScore, and smart tools to help you find the best candidate for you. Indeed also provides flexibility to only pay for what you need and won't lock you into any long-term contracts. Claim your $75 credit to get more quality candidates fast when you post your first job at Indeed.com/high impact. That's Indeed.com/high impact. Terms and conditions apply.
Is your prostate waking you up more often than your alarm clock? The fact is, the older you get, the more likely you'll have prostate problems, which can affect your everyday life. That's where Prostate Complete by Real Health comes in. Prostate Complete is the result of 20 years of experience as a leader in men's health. The powerful formula in Prostate Complete supports natural prostate function and reduced urinary urges for a better quality of life. Available at Walmart. Visit prostateoneperday.com for special offers. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Download Perino and Steierwald. I'll tell you what.
Right now, we are in the very heart of the point of lightly attached partisans are now receiving. The bad signals are up. It's the home stretch. It's time to come home and remember the good times. Remember what you love about the party and remember why you hate those other guys. So that's why there are convention bounces.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. America's listening to Fox News.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1970.
The student now goes to college to proclaim rather than to learn. The lessons of the past are ignored and obliterated in a contemporary antagonism known as the generation gap.
You just go through a phase of wanting to be up there, you know, in the limelight. Well, I'm going through a phase now where I don't want to be in the limelight.
Ali comes out to meet Frazier, but Frazier starts to retreat. If Frazier goes back an inch farther, he'll wind up in a ringside seat. Ali swings with the left. Ali swings with the right. Look at the kids carry the fight.
Everybody just gathered around, organized. And it was orderly. No kids were out of hand. They just wanted to talk. Two sections throwing tear gas, and the kids were picking up and throwing them back at the cops. And they chased the kids over the hill. The cops were boxed in. There was kids all around them. All of a sudden, cops got trigger happy and shot kids.
News as it happens. News as it happens.
This is Fox News Talk.
This is Fox on Justice. $1 billion could buy you a lot of Big Macs. $1 billion, or close to it, is the supersize of a lawsuit against McDonald's, filed in Chicago by 52 former franchise owners, all of them African American. The lawsuit is all about location. They claim black owners aren't awarded the same quality locations as others. Instead, they're given franchises in lower-income minority neighborhoods, where costs are higher for things like insurance and security. They say the difference in revenue from a good location to a struggling one can be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And as a result of what they describe as discrimination, many franchise owners have failed over the past few years. McDonald's says it categorically denies the allegations, says it works extra hard to promote and support black-owned franchises, and was one of the first corporations to come out in support of the Black Lives Matter movement following the death of George Floyd. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
International terrorism was always someplace else. Nobody was thinking that it would be here.
Fox Nation presents a groundbreaking series about the rise of jihad.
They said the next enemy is the United States.
And the spread of a movement that would change America.
They worked on that as hard as they could to figure another way to bring those towers down.
The Rising Crescent, a groundbreaking documentary series, streaming now only on Fox Nation. Download Fox Nation and start watching the streaming service celebrating America.
Back on the Guy Benson Show, I want to play you another soundbite that I think is relevant to this, right? I made a pretty critical case about the administration and certainly President Trump a moment ago, but Dr. Anthony Fauci, who was in the room for all of this stuff, a key player in all of it, he was on Fox News Channel about an hour ago. John Roberts filling in for Dana Perino on the Daily Briefing. Listen to this question and answer from Fauci, cut 43.
I may not be tuned in to the right thing that they're talking about, but I didn't really see any discrepancies between what he told us and what we told him and what he ultimately came out publicly and said.
So did you get a sense that he was or wasn't playing this down?
No. No, I didn't. I didn't get any sense that he was distorting anything. I mean, in my discussions with him, they were always straightforward about the concerns that we had.
I didn't get the sense that he was distorting anything. So Fauci had access to this entire situation with a front row seat, with a lot of the decision-making processes coming through him. Now, I know a lot of pro-Trump people will trash Fauci when they want to, and then Fauci's this angel whose word is gospel on the left, except for maybe now or when he says things that make their partisanship a little bit more uncomfortable. If Fauci is saying that the president wasn't distorting reality, that should matter, right? That's a significant piece of this controversy, and I wanted to play that for you as well. Senator John Barrasso joins me after this break on The Guy Benson Show.
News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. Plus, when you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live.
Wow, that's huge.
Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand.
Serious questions must be answered.
I'm Dave Anthony.
That's not all. Hear your favorite podcasts from Dana Perino, Phil Hemmer, Martha McCallum, Brett Baer, and many more. Fox News Radio and the Fox News app. Download it today. America's listening to Fox News.
I'm Ashley DeBorca with a Fox Movie Profile and a look at new movies in theaters and new releases on demand, including the superhero flick from the X-Men universe, The New Mutants. Here's Fandango's Eric Davis.
The New Mutants, really the biggest wide release that we have seen since March. It's going to be on about 2,800 screens. It's about these five mutants, these young kids who are just coming to terms with the powers that they have.
A big film both in theaters and on demand is Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Keanu Reeves, Alex Winter reprising these roles, these classic iconic roles, 30 years later. This time their daughters help out.
And when it comes to theaters reopening, Davis shares what was learned from the theaters only release of Unhinged.
Unhinged earned $4 million on about 1,800 screens. The best performing screens, believe it or not, were drive-ins in California. So it was a good number. It showed you that a lot of people were going to the theater.
Ashley DeBorkin, Fox News.
Sunday on Fox. It's a season opener for the ages on America's Game of the Week. Tom Brady and Gronk make their highly anticipated Bucs debut in an NFC South showdown against Drew Brees.
What a throw!
Michael Thomas and the reigning division champion Saints.
Touchdown!
Sunday at 4 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
This is Fox on Justice. Most Americans who know about the 1994 Rwanda genocide know about it because of the movie Hotel Rwanda.
How can they not intervene? Hundreds of thousands are dying.
Don Cheadle played the hotel manager Paul Rusesabagina, who was credited with saving more than 1,000 people. He was praised and honored worldwide for his actions. President George W. Bush awarded him the Medal of Freedom. He had been living away from Rwanda, including in Texas, and became a vocal critic of Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame, calling him a dictator. Paul Rusesabagina has been arrested on terror charges and returned to Rwanda in handcuffs. The government says he's a leader and sponsor of violent extremists, and there was an international arrest warrant for him. He's denied the charges. It's believed more than 800,000 people were murdered in the Rwanda genocide. The Kagame government claims Rusesabagina was no hero, that he took money to protect people in 1994. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, addresses the Camp David Accords between Israel and Egypt that, on March 26, 1979, led to a negotiated peace between the two nations, the first between Israel and any of its Arab neighbors.
The countrysides of both lands are free from the litter and the carnage of a wasteful war. Mothers in Egypt and Israel are not weeping today for their children fallen in senseless battle. The dedication and determination of these two world statesmen have borne fruit. Peace has come to Israel and to Egypt.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
A girl from Illinois who saved a neighbor thanks to her superhero hearing makes today's Dean's List. 13-year-old Casey Brislane received the Girl Scouts Medal of Honor for saving Susie Schubert. The national award is given to Girl Scouts who save another person's life. Casey says she was watching TV back in early January when she started to notice the faint sound of someone yelling for help outside her family's home in the Cook County village of Harwood Heights. She ran outside and found Susie, her neighbor, wedged underneath a car following a fall. Her face was beneath a tailpipe and she had broken an arm and twisted her legs on top of the ice. Susie says when the paramedics arrived, she was so cold they couldn't give her medication through an IV until she warmed up. Casey didn't leave her side. And Susie says she's her guardian angel. Casey, you're amazing. And a true superhero. You made the Dean's List. Janice Dean, Fox News.
The Guy Benson Show.
Back live on the program, Guy Benson, broadcasting from my home. Glad that you're listening wherever you are, live or on our podcast, which is always free. Joined now by U.S. Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming. He's the chairman of the Senate Republican Conference, also a medical doctor. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, great to be back with you, Guy. Thank you.
I want to get to this issue of the COVID relief bill that will get a procedural vote tomorrow. I've been following that very closely over the last couple days. Before we get to that issue, I have to ask you about the big news of the day. Politically, this Bob Woodward book, Rage, and the audio, these on-the-record interviews he did with President Trump over the course of the last few months. And now it seems that the president has said that he downplayed coronavirus to avoid panic. But he also had tweeted along the way that this was sort of similar to a flu, or tried to use comparisons to a normal flu, even though he was telling Bob Woodward in their private conversations that are now of public record, there's recordings of them, that he knew coronavirus even back in early February was much more deadly than even a bad flu. So your reaction as you hear this, do you think this could be a game changer about how the American public views the response of the president and his administration to this pandemic, which already, based on the polling, was pretty shaky?
Well, yeah, I think the president acted boldly and correctly when he shut down air travel from China very early on, and he realized then the potential serious nature of this flu. This was at a time when you had the mayor of New York saying, hey, come on out in New York, and he had Nancy Pelosi in Chinatown saying, come on out. So I think the president was ahead on that. Certainly you never want to panic the public, and I think the president was right to not want to panic the public. But what we have made remarkable progress to the point that it is now approaching, with the new medications and everything, a point where it's like a bad case of the flu, and we want to get it to the point where it's like a mild case of the flu, and that's where we're heading with the vaccine. So we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go, but the economy is opening up. The country is moving forward. We need to get coronavirus behind us.
Yeah, I think that those are all fair points. I guess the one follow-up is this. If you have President Trump talking to a reporter on the record, but with an embargo, a lid, in early February, saying it travels through the air, speaking of the virus, it's very easily transmitted, it's much more deadly than even a strenuous flu, that's February 7th, and then March 9th, the president's tweeting, comparing coronavirus to a normal flu season, isn't there a problem there?
Well, people will ultimately make a decision about the president's full record as president of the United States. I'm sure the Democrats will try to have a field day with this, and this will be a big story with the book for this period of time, and then something else will develop. We have this is a presidential election year, and everything that the president does one way or the other is going to be tried to be used politically, either for or against him, and it does seem that the mainstream press and others are trying to use everything they can against him.
Earlier today, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, the Senate Majority Leader, came to the floor and announced that there will be a procedural vote tomorrow on a COVID-19 relief bill. This is sort of round four. Negotiations have gone nowhere. The Democrats have their crazy bill that has no chance of becoming law. It's just $3.4 trillion. It's just ludicrous. And so this is a much more focused, pared-down version that the Republicans are going to try to advance. Here's what McConnell said earlier, cut 36. Listen.
It will be a procedural vote. It's not a vote to pass our bill tomorrow precisely as written. It's a vote for senators to say whether they want to move forward toward huge amounts of relief for kids, for jobs, for health care, or whether they are happier doing absolutely nothing. That is what every single senator will decide tomorrow. Do you want to do something, or do you want to do nothing?
So, Senator Barrasso, before we get to the politics of this, let's talk about the policy. For a while, it seemed like your conference was having trouble getting on the same page to even get to 51 votes in favor of a round four. It seems clear now, McConnell doesn't do this type of thing unless he's confident that there are the votes there, at least theoretically, a simple majority to advance this bill. What's in it? What are the elements of this legislation that you think make it worthy of discussion and at least something close to it passage?
Well, you're right. It is a targeted, focused Republican plan to help finish this fight against coronavirus. And to me, that's three elements. It's getting people back to work safely. And that's targeted paycheck protection loans so that small businesses can stay open.
Just to jump in, that's more PPP. This is another round of the PPP program.
And you want to get into the details. It's specifically for small businesses, businesses less than 300 employees. It's getting kids back to school safely. And there's a school choice component of this because you have some schools that won't open and you have that are public schools and private schools in the same area that are open. It's funding for elementary and secondary schools and colleges. And then it's putting the disease behind us with many more tests and treatment and vaccines. And this, you know, the vaccine at Operation Warp Speed and the Shark Tank work for testing. I mean, we heard at lunch today, and, you know, I chair the Republican conference, reports. There was a hearing this morning, all of which is pointing to the fact that we may be able to do 60 million tests a month, 2 million a day, added tests.
Wow.
So we're at the point where testing is no longer going to be a problem, that people can get tested. And when you can add the vaccine on top of that, it's really going to make a big difference between putting this in the rearview mirror. So it's people back to work, kids back to school safely, and the disease behind us.
And it looks like there's also some elements in there about the supply chain and China for a number of different things, including pharmaceuticals, including crucial minerals. There are a number of different provisions in there. The unemployment provision as well would basically take what the president has done by executive order and codify that by and large into law. That's at least the proposal. So we heard there from Senator McConnell, Leader McConnell, today saying tomorrow when the Senate gets together and has this vote, it's not going to be a vote saying yes or no, this is now passed out of the Senate. This is a vote procedurally to move on to the bill, as they say in D.C., to have a debate about it, to have amendments, to go back and forth and discuss the elements, maybe make some alterations, and then get to that next level where you would consider passage. What, Senator, would be the explanation from the Democrats should they decide to filibuster this and block even getting onto the bill? I mean, I wouldn't be stunned. Yeah. They've done it already on COVID-19 in round one of the CARES Act when Nancy Pelosi decided she wanted to gum up the works for a while. They did it with police reform not long ago where they demanded a bill and then filibustered even debating the bill and then complained that the situation hasn't gotten better. It seems like this is their MO now to block, 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 using a filibuster while they, by the way, say that they want to get rid of the filibuster if they get power back. What's the explanation that they might give? And maybe that's premature. Do you get the sense that that is the path they're going to go, a filibuster tomorrow?
I think you have a perfect assessment of this. I've come to this conclusion about Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer when it comes to coronavirus relief. I think they are so obsessed with defeating President Trump that they are going to block any and all bipartisan aid to American people until after the presidential election. I really believe that. We know that it's coming right from the top because over 100 Democrat members of the House publicly said to Speaker Pelosi, hey, stop stonewalling. At least allow us to vote on targeted relief. She refused to listen. So that's where we are today. The Democrats, Pelosi and Schumer, they have to think it's smart politics to block any help for the American people. I say it's no time for political games. Families need the help, and the obstruction by the Democrats continues to be hurting people, and I believe they must be held accountable.
One of the arguments that Speaker Pelosi has made when she's not out there trashing Tim Scott as being complicit in the murder of George Floyd or saying that Senate Republicans and the president are enemies of the state or getting off the books illegal blowouts in San Francisco and blaming the people who blew the whistle on that hypocrisy. She's up to a lot of things these days. When she's not doing that, she's making the argument, no, we have to pass our huge partisan Democratic bill, $3.4 trillion, even though billions haven't been spent from the first round. We need to do $3.4 trillion more dollars, or, you know, I'm willing to come all the way down to two-something trillion dollars, and it has to be this big comprehensive thing. It cannot be piecemeal legislation. That's unacceptable. Except, Senator, 2 points. This bill that's going to be introduced tomorrow for the procedural vote, it's not a piecemeal bill. It is comprehensive, just more pared down and sort of skinnier by DC standards, point one. Point two, unless I have been dreaming for the last month, I'm pretty sure the Democrats came back from their recess in the House to vote on a piecemeal bill about something recently. Did they not?
Well, you got it right again. They came back to do an emergency postal bill. And you're right that the bill that we've introduced is focused on jobs, on kids, and on the disease. The bill that I talked about is Nancy Pelosi's trip to Fantasy Island. Remember that the New York Times said that bill that the House passed months ago. This is the quote from the liberal New York Times. The bill was more a messaging document than a viable piece of legislation.
Oh,
NPR
said the bill
marks a long wish list for Democrats. So it's not serious or legitimate legislation. It shouldn't be treated as such. I don't treat it as such. And now Nancy Pelosi holds it up like it's the Ten Commandments, and that's not the case at all. This is all politics by Schumer and Pelosi, and Pelosi's really running the show. Chuck Schumer is her lieutenant on this, her deputy, doing what she wants to be done. And this speaks to just how bad it's going to be if we find in November that Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker, that Chuck Schumer is the majority leader, and that somebody other than Donald Trump is in the White House. It's damn the torpedoes. They're going full speed ahead to far, far left with raising taxes, with basically Biden said he'd shut down the economy again, defunding the police instead of defending it, which is what Republicans want to do. We got to be worried about our own liberties in terms of freedom of speech and religion and our Second Amendment rights. So I'll tell you, it's all politics for them, and I'm very concerned to make sure that for the future of the country, we make sure that President Trump is reelected. We have a Republican Senate to help him continue to confirm conservative judges. But, boy, it is all on the line come November, and we're seeing the Democrats' obsession with defeating President Trump in play tomorrow on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah, and I think if you set aside their obsession with defeating Trump, let's say they check that box and the election happens, they've beaten him, then the obsession will turn to passing everything that they possibly can, which might entail they're now openly discussing blowing up the very tool of the minority that they are using repeatedly to thwart even common sense conversations about things like police reform and COVID relief. They would end the filibuster, they're talking about doing that, to just railroad through this left-wing agenda. And that's why I feel like at least having one break on that process with a Senate majority is such an important piece of this election for right of center and even centrist voters who might be uncomfortable with the president but aren't interested in seeing Nancy Pelosi dominate the entire agenda and be able to actually implement it. And so I guess that's my question that I keep coming back to, at least for tomorrow. If Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi confer and they say, okay, this bill has all these poison pills, they keep using that term, fine, let's talk about school choice. Maybe they want that stuff out because they're in favor of teachers' unions and all that. They can come to the table and say, that's a little too hot for our liking. Let's strike certain pieces of this. Let's change some of the verbiage. Let's make alterations. They could do those things, right, if they got onto the bill. What would be the reason, aside from pure politics, to say we're not even going to entertain a conversation or a debate?
There's no reasonable or responsible reason for them to not get on the bill, but I think it's all politics. I think it is all politics with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi.
So hang on. So just Senator, just to make it clear then, is it your expectation that there will be a Democratic filibuster tomorrow?
That's what I'm expecting. We're going to have over 50 Republicans voting for this movement forward on kids, jobs, and fighting the disease. And I think the Democrats will, in lockstep, block getting on the bill for further in discussion and giving help to the people around the country who really need it, and we should be helping.
There might be a handful of Democrats who might join the GOP on this, but you'd need 60 votes, and I guess Schumer probably feels like he can get to 41 to pull off and facilitate this filibuster. He's done so successfully on other, hot potatoes. including COVID relief, as I mentioned, including police reform, as I mentioned. Yeah. Is there just a sense, Senator, that on the Democratic side, this election is so much about Donald Trump that they can sort of do whatever they want to do and it won't really capture the attention of the American voter? Like, I would, looking at this from my perspective, if I were a member of a political party in the U.S. Senate and I had a choice between debating a desperately needed relief bill during a pandemic and filibustering it, on the filibuster side, for partisan reasons, I would be worried about that, not just the outcomes for the American people, but also for my own political rear end. Will voters be very unhappy if it looks like we're being obstructionists? Is their calculation that people won't know or won't care?
I think Chuck Schumer's calculation is with the Senate in play and 23 Republicans up and 12 Democrats up, that he is already calling the shots to his Senate candidates around the country to label the Republicans as unable to get things done. And he believes that by obstructing and allowing nothing to be done in any bipartisan way between now and Election Day, he thinks that helps in his life ambition, which is to become the majority leader of the United States Senate.
Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, the chairman of the Senate Republican Conference, a doctor. He is my guest here on the show. We've got to take a break. Senator, we so appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks, Guy.
President Trump is speaking at the White House. We will keep an eye on that. We'll take a break. We might dip in when we return. It's the Guy Benson Show. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Guy Benson.
These days, being prepared for the unknown is more important than ever. I'm sure you've noticed the world we live in today is anything but predictable. We could all benefit from something reliable right about now. Well, what could be more reliable than real gold and silver? I'm asking you that. I'm talking about real gold and silver that you can hold in your hands if you choose. Call the Oxford Gold Group and do it right now. Learn how easy it is to get real gold and silver sent securely to your hands, to your home, or have real gold and silver placed directly into your IRA, or maybe have a 401k or both. Call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-600-GOLD. They're waiting for you. Ask for your free guide on owning gold and silver. Don't feel like you got to know all about it. That's what the guide is for, and that's why it's free. So call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-600-GOLD. That's the Oxford Gold Group. I've been telling you about this. It's the only gold company that I trust. So call them right now. You have a pen? Call them right now at 833-600-GOLD, 833-600-GOLD. That's 833-600-G-O-L-D.
Hiring can be challenging, but ZipRecruiter makes it fast and easy. We talked to Monica Starks, who needed to hire for a pivotal role at her company, GS Group.
As the owner of a construction company, finding the right people is a very difficult task, so I use ZipRecruiter.
ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology identifies the right people for your job and actively invites them to apply, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/search. Monica did, and that's how she found Lamont, her new project superintendent.
The job is so perfect for me. I had a career breakthrough. I would have never found this job if it wasn't for ZipRecruiter.
With ZipRecruiter, we've hired everyone from accountants to project managers to field scientists. With ZipRecruiter, we get hiring results.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free at ZipRecruiter.com/search. That's ZipRecruiter.com/search. ZipRecruiter.com/search.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast.
So if the country is a center or center-right country, racing to the edges is a recipe for what we have right now, which is division. And of course, we are told the Senate is where the adults are. Of the 50 states, 9, by my count, have both a Republican and a Democrat senator. 9.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. America's listening to Fox News. Military Matters.
In its 2019 report to Congress, the Pentagon said China had the largest navy in Asia. Now, it's bigger than the U.S. Navy. That, according to the Pentagon's new military assessment of China.
We may face eroding competitive military advantage.
Chad Shabraja is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for China and spoke to the American Enterprise Institute.
It is likely that China will seek to build a military that is equal to, or in some cases superior to, the U.S. military or the military of any other great power that China perceives as a potential threat.
In the past year, the Defense Department says China has added to its stockpile of intermediate-range ballistic missiles. The new report says China will double its nuclear warheads over the next decade. U.S. intelligence says China has roughly 200 nuclear warheads right now. The U.S. military has roughly 3,800 and plans to deploy land-based intermediate-range missiles to the region after leaving the INF Treaty with Russia, which barred the U.S. from having missiles in this range. For Military Matters at the Pentagon, Lucas Tomlinson, Fox News.
Hey folks, it's John Rich and welcome to The Pursuit.
Hear the awe-inspiring stories from all walks of life.
It's how you respond to situations that really tell people what you're made of.
To me, there was no option of failure.
It's what gets us out of bed in the morning.
And what being an American means to them.
I hope that no one out there forgets how lucky we are to just be born in this country.
This is a good life.
Watch an all-new season of The Pursuit with John Rich. Available now on Fox Nation.
Guy Benson Show, Fox News Alert. President Trump is speaking at the White House. He is now taking questions from reporters. I know the very first question was about the Woodward book. We've been talking about it this hour. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to basically hit pause on these Q&A back and forth exchanges, and we will play them for you at the top of the next hour because we're almost out of time in this hour. So at 4:05 Eastern, when we come back, we will bring you this exchange between the president and reporters as he responds to this huge story about Bob Woodward, the recordings, and this new book, Rage, and particularly what the president said back in February and March about coronavirus. We'll be very eager to hear how he's addressing it. By the way, this coming on the same day that President Trump has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Why? Well, we've talked about the Israel-UAE agreement. That is certainly historic. There's also some real important movement on Serbia and Kosovo that the Trump administration has been overseeing. So whether you think he's deserving or not, he's certainly a lot more deserving on the merits now than when Barack Obama won a Nobel Peace Prize for doing nothing in 2009. They sort of liked his speeches. There are actual accomplishments here, at least for President Trump. Another hour coming up, including these questions and the answers from the president. We will take you to the White House in the next hour. Guy Benson Show. What does COVID-19 have to do with losing your home? A lot, actually. The FBI reports that since the virus struck, cybercrime is up 75%, and it gets worse. The legal title to all of our homes are now online. The crime is called home title theft, and it's everywhere. Cybercriminals find the title of your home online, forge your signature on a quitclaim deed, and refile as the new owner of your home. You are off the title. They destroy you by taking out loans against your home. They steal the cash and stick you with the payments. You might not even know about it until you get a late payment notice or a foreclosure notice. Home Title Lock protects your home's legal title. Your home is your most valuable asset and your safe haven. Home Title Lock puts a virtual barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect tampering, they shut it down. First things first, go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then use code GUY, G-U-Y, for 30 free days of protection. That's code GUY at HomeTitleLock.com.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Yankee great Casey Stengel and Mickey Mantle testified before the Senate Antitrust and Monopoly Subcommittee hearing on baseball.
I was asking you, sir, why it is that baseball wants this bill passed.
I would say I wouldn't know, but I would say the reason why they'd want it passed is to keep baseball going as the highest baseball sport that has gone into baseball and from the baseball angle. I'm not going to speak of any other sport. I'm not in here to argue about other sports. I'm in the baseball business. It's been run cleaner than any baseball business that was ever put out in the 100 years at the present time.
Well, Mr. Mantle, do you have any observations with reference to the applicability of the antitrust laws to baseball?
My views are just about the same as Casey's.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.